the most heralded, the most despised talk show in all of human history. This is the talk show Hell Hates. This is Pastor Mike Online. And here we are coming to you live from our top secret broadcasting bunker here at Area 52. This is the 2019 review of the year 2019. Today is the last day of 2019, last day of the month of December, last day of the decade of the 2010s. Imagine that. They're already celebrating New Year's Day in Australia, and it's just going to move all around the world until it gets here. I doubt seriously that I'll stay up late and do anything significant, except for just pray, God, make 2020 a lot better year than you did in 2019. If some of you watched our Sunday morning service, I was pretty burdened. And the Bible tells you don't do this, but you do it anyway. You know, Paul said, forgetting those things that are behind, let us press toward the mark, forward, not backward. And, you know, it's hard when you have, when you go through bad times, you remember those bad times. And it's difficult to not ever think about the past ever again. But it was really on me Sunday, and I was just very, very emotional over all the things that had happened to me, to our family, to our church in the year 2019. And I'm not going to go through all that today. But what I thought I would do today is, rather than dwell on the bad things that happened, let's look at the good things that this ministry put out in 2019 that is probably the reason why the devil gave us so much grief in 2019, is because of the things that God used our ministry to expose to this world. So what I'm going to try to do today, and I don't know that I'll even be able to get through a whole year's worth of Watchmen broadcast in one broadcast, but I went back in all of the Watchmen scripts that I did, and I just pulled out pieces of them, and we're going to go back and we're going to review some of the things that we learned, or some of the things that we looked at in the Watchmen video broadcast or the conferences that we did. We had several things. We had the Red River Prophecy Conference, and then right after that, we went to Pastor Jason Cooley's church up in Minnesota. Had some great meetings up there. Great. I mean, it was our kind of people. It's people that, you know, they believe that there are evil things going on in this world. And their church actually confronts them head on. They're different than us. I confront them hidden inside my little bunker here. And Pastor Cooley and some of his people, they go out there in the streets. And they are going to be out tonight. And I want you to pray for them. They're going to be out tonight preaching at people who are celebrating New Year's Eve and New Year's, and most of them getting drunk, acting wild. Pastor Cooley and some of his team are going to go out there preaching the gospel to them. And I want you to cover him in prayer, because he deals with a lot of what I deal with, and you wouldn't think it. because he gets out there and when he starts preaching, I mean, he's bold. He's, you know, he's preaching hard to these people. You wouldn't think he's got any kind of fear in him, but he does. And with me preaching to a group of unknown people that I think hate my guts, that doesn't come easy for me at all. In fact, I don't do it. I would rather sit in here, the safety of my compound where nobody can find me, and say the things that need to be said. So that's how he's going to be spending his night tonight. So he's asked me to pray for him. I'm asking you to pray for Pastor Cooley and his team while they're out there witnessing and giving out gospel tracts and preaching to people who more than likely are going to be drunk. Well, so here's the hope. The hope is they take a gospel tract, go home, and pass out with that gospel tract in their hand or in their pocket. And when they wake up tomorrow morning after the liquor is worn off and the hangover is set in, and they say, I don't ever want to do this again, they have a gospel tract in their hand that shows them how they cannot ever do that again through the power of Jesus Christ. So anyway, here is a review now of the things that we looked at. Let's see here. I got to push a couple of buttons here to get it up on the screen. Got to remember how to do this every time. Push that one. And that, there we go. A list of the things that we talked about in the year 2019. Started out dealing with the Watchman broadcast series called Storm Clouds. Now, I've done a study on the clouds of the Bible and how Jesus is coming back in the clouds. The Bible makes us, you know, aware of that, and it's one of the sure signs of Christ coming. But God said he's going to bring a cloud over the land. He said that in Genesis 9. He said, not if, but when I bring a cloud over the land, then look in that cloud, because I'm going to set my bow in that cloud. And that bow, of course, seven colors of the rainbow, which is light. So we know that it represents the seven spirits of God, and it represents Jesus Christ. So he's the one coming in the clouds. But God also mentioned a group that's coming also in the clouds. Ezekiel chapter 38 is a prophecy. Of course, many of you have seen it before, heard of it before. It's a prophecy of Gog. I need to lower my seat just a little bit. There we go. It's a prophecy of Gog and Magog. And God said, Ezekiel 38:1, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face against Gog, the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and prophesy against him, and say, Thus saith the Lord God, Behold, I am against thee, O Gog, the chief prince. Now remember, Gog comes out of the north, but Gog is called a chief prince. Does that mean that it's only an earthly leader of some kind? I say no, and I think the Bible backs us up on that. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities. We have the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience. So I think that Gog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, is not an earthly ruler over Meshach and Tubal. I think it's a spirit that rules over them. And so God says, Behold, I'm against thee, O Gog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and I will turn thee back. Get my fan going here. Turn thee back and put my hooks into thy jaws, and I will bring thee forth and all thine enemy, horses and horsemen, all of them. And I want you to stop and think about this one too. This one will throw you. If you still believe the Bible, which I do, and you still believe that the Bible literally means what it says, ask yourself the question, what army still to this day fights on horseback? Which one? None that I'm aware of. They ride jeeps, armored vehicles, tanks, you name it. But no army that I'm aware of fights and defends its national borders against all enemies while sitting on horseback. Why? Because all you got to do is shoot the horse. And then they don't have anything to get around on. So, if I were to take the Bible literally, which I do, when I see that God prophesies in the future an arm, now, and some would look at it and say, now, that was the only way that Ezekiel, those are the only terms that he had to describe what it was he was seeing. I don't believe that. And because the reason why I don't believe that is these are not Ezekiel's words. None of them are. God didn't show Ezekiel a vision, and then Ezekiel had to write it in terms that he could understand. That is not what the Bible says. The Bible says that God actually had a book written on both sides. And he gave that book to Ezekiel, told him to eat it, and he ate it. And then he said, now go prophesy to the people the words that I wrote on that book. So the words that come out of Ezekiel's mouth and he's writing down are not his version of what he saw. They are the exact words of God. And God still has an army of horses and horsemen and chariots. God still does it. Read Revelation 19. When Jesus returns for the final battle of Armageddon, and his 10,000s of his saints are coming with him, what are we all riding on? Helicopters, tanks, Humvees, armored vehicles. What are we riding on? We're riding on horses. Spirit horses. But they're still horses. So this prophecy here is absolutely spot on and no misunderstanding whatsoever. The army that God is going to bring, the army of Gog, is an army that is going to be riding on horseback, and it's not the Russians. It's not the Canadians. It's not the Norwegians or the Swedish. It's not any of those people. It's a country that is farther north than any of those nations. You see what I'm saying? So it's not an army of humans. It's an army led by Gog, who is a chief prince, making him a principality of Meshach and of Tubal. And I will, God says, and I will turn thee back and put my hooks into thy jaws, and I will bring thee forth and all thine army, horses and horsemen, all of them clothed with all sorts of armor, even a great company with bucklers and shields, and all of them handling swords. Now, again, in 21st century modern warfare, what army still fights battles with swords? And I'll say this. What army still puts bayonets on the end of their rifles, which are a type of sword? Who still does that? Nobody that I'm aware of still does that. So you either think of it one of two ways. Either A, some sort of thermonuclear blast has taken place in the upper atmosphere, and it basically has shut down everything that is run by electronics, which causes all the nations of the world to resort to riding on horseback and using swords and spears and arrows rather than guns. And even at that, even if you had an EMP blast, since the recoil of an automatic weapon does not require electricity, it works off of the recoil by the explosion of gunpowder, which ejects the old cartridge and brings in a new cartridge. You still don't have that. So if this Bible is right, and I believe it is, and everything that it says, if this Bible is right, then this army is either the worst army that's ever seen in modern warfare, and they're going to get killed, slaughtered, every one of them, because they're still fighting with swords and riding on horses, or it's an army whose swords and horses cannot be defeated with bullets, bombs, tanks, anything like that. And I tend to think the latter. I tend to think that this is an army of spirits that comes riding in on spirit horses, and they have in their hands spirit swords, which cannot be fought against nor defended against with any kind of carnal earthly weapon. But notice in verse 9, this was the point of it. Thou shalt ascend and come like a storm. Thou shalt be like a cloud to cover the land, thou and all thy bands and many people with thee. So the point that with this particular Watchman series, the point I was making was, okay, we have Jesus coming, he and his army, they're coming with clouds, and they're coming to fight a war. However, Satan and his army are also coming with clouds, they and their army, and it's going to be up to God's people to discern and decide which army is the kingdom of Christ, which army is the kingdom of the Antichrist in the last days. 2 Thessalonians 2. Now we beseech you, brethren, by the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and by our gathering together unto him, that you be not soon shaken in mind or be troubled, neither by spirit, nor by word, nor by letter as from us, as that the day of Christ is at hand. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come, except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. So it mentions the day, the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, and it mentions the day of Christ, which is also the day of the Lord. That day is coming. And I believe that Gog and Magog are part of that day. I believe the revelation of the Antichrist, with him showing himself that he is God, is part of that day. And so in Joel chapter 2, verse 2, we have a day of darkness and of gloominess, a day of clouds and of thick darkness, as the morning spread upon the mountains. And then he calls that cloud a great people and a strong. There hath not been either the like, neither shall be any more after it, even to the years of many generations. In other words, man has never seen an army like this, nor afterwards will any man ever see an army like this. Because the day of the Lord is a day of clouds. And the clouds that God is bringing to this world is a cloud of people that are great and they are strong. And they're riding on horseback and they're using swords and they're carrying spears. Again, something that currently no army anywhere in the world still uses to do battle with. They may use it in a ceremonial fashion. You know, Marines are given a sword to wear. Certain generals, certain naval captains, they're given a sword to wear. But they definitely don't use that sword in battle. So it's merely a tradition, a sign of tradition, and some sort of sign that they have achieved and accomplished a certain level in the military. They've earned their sword. They don't fight with that sword. They fight with, you know, battleships. They fight with submarines. They fight with airplanes. They fight with thermonuclear bombs. They fight with all these things, modern warfare. They do not fight with javelins. They do not come riding in on horseback. They literally don't use shields that can shield off someone, you know, swinging a sword at you or throwing a javelin at you. They don't use that. Policemen wear shields. That's what they're called. The badge that they wear is that they call it a shield. But it's not a shield in the sense that they use that shield to protect and defend themselves from robbers and thieves and murderers and so on. It's merely a symbolic shield. But this army that's coming, it's coming as a cloud over the land. And remember, when God said, when I bring this cloud over the land, I don't want you to worry. Now, here's one of the reasons why I wanted to go through all of this again. Is I spent 2019 with a lot of worries. A lot of worries. I was worried about my own family. Worried about my wife. Worried about the people in our church. Some of whom we kept, some of whom we lost. And some of the people that we lost, I didn't think would ever walk out in our church. We had been friends for years. But I had some rebellious people in the church that made phone calls and spread a lot of unsubstantiated rumors, not about me, about other people in the church. And those people left because they believed the rumors and the lies. And when I presented myself to them to try to give them the alternative version of it, you know what they said? We don't want to get involved. Excuse me. You already got involved. You just don't want to hear the truth, my side of the story. Okay? So, yeah, there was a lot of things that I was very concerned about. A lot of things that I feared would happen. And those things came true. And this very evil army came in like a storm, like a cloud, to cover our church and to put us in darkness. Okay, so one of the reasons why I wanted to go back through this was to remember just how good God is. Because if he's fought all of these battles before in the Old Testament, New Testament, He's the same God now as he was then. He got victory in those days. He can get victory in today's world. Matthew 24, verse 29. Immediately after the tribulation of those days. Now, something that I know that I brought up this year was the issue of the word tribulation. And how long does it last? Can you show me a verse in the Bible where the tribulation lasts 7 years? Can you show me that verse in the Bible? Can you show me a place where it says, God shall appoint thee a time of tribulation, yea, 7 years shall pass. Can you find a place like that in the Bible anywhere? The answer is no. It's not there. It's an extrapolation. And I guess, and something they want to jam into the meaning of Daniel chapter 9. I'm not going to get into all that. But I've never read anywhere in the Bible where the tribulation that he's talking about here, immediately after the tribulation of those days, that lasts 7 years. So some people who call themselves pre-trib say that we leave before the 7-year tribulation. Where do they get that from? Some who say, I'm a mid-trib. I believe that we'll have to endure 3.5 years, but we're going to be raptured 3.5 years of the last part of the tribulation. Again, where do they get that from? Then you have those who say, I'm a post-trib. I believe that we will go through all 7 years of the tribulation. And again, my question is, where does it say that there's going to be a 7-year or a 3.5-year tribulation on the earth? It's a simple question. Never had an answer to that. Never. Anyway, immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light. The stars shall fall from heaven. The powers of the heavens shall be shaken. And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn. Tribes simply means families, racial lines, bloodlines, kindred, kinfolk. You know, we don't call, you know, the different, you know, there are in America, there are German Americans or Italian Americans. There are British Americans. There are Dutch Americans. We don't refer to them as tribes, but technically that's what they are. They're nationality-based family members. But the Bible refers to them as tribes because they come from a certain bloodline of people. So it doesn't necessarily have to do with Israel simply because Israel was divided up into tribes. And I've heard that argument said about this. Then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. Then in verse 30, and then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he shall send his angels with the great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. So the bottom line is that without a doubt in my mind, that when God is done with this period of tribulation, no matter how long it is, that is when he's going to gather together his elect from the four winds of heaven all the way around. He's going to gather them together, all of his elect. There's some who say, well, God only refers to the Jews as the elect. That's not true either. It's not just the Jews who are the elect. We are elected by the grace of God and by the foreknowledge of God. Elect according to the foreknowledge of Jesus Christ. God knew that we would be saved. God knew that we would live a life of faith. God knew that in our last breath on this earth, we would be saying, Lord, into thy hands I commend my spirit. God knew that. And that's why God decided to save us. Okay? Then, this is, you know, along with that idea of God bringing a cloud over the land, the clouds hiding out the sun, blocking out the sunlight. Clouds being like the kingdom of Gog and Magog coming down on this earth. You have a mural in the Capitol building of Washington, D.C., and the Capitol Dome on the inside. The mural is called the Apotheosis of Washington. And there are, man, you want to talk about occult symbols. See these little stars here, these little pentagrams? You would think there would be 50 of them because there's 50 states, right? There's not. For some strange reason, there's 72 of them. Why are there 72? Is that saying that 12 more states are going to be added to the union? I don't think so. But notice you have George Washington giving you the, let's see, where's my pen here? He's giving you the as above, so below sign, or roughly thereabout. And he's seated as a king. The painting is called the Apotheosis of Washington. The word theosis, it means to be made into a god. So the phrase apotheosis literally means the man who became God. Now remember your Bible history. Where was it promised that man would become God? Genesis chapter 3. When the serpent beguiled the woman with his subtlety and said, eat, for God doth know in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. And this mural is actually like here. See this circle here? It's the very tippy tip top of the Capitol Dome if you were looking at it on the outside. That would be the very, very highest point. And the Capitol Rotunda underneath, directly underneath that mural, is where if you are president of the United States and you died, like in our time, some of you were alive when Kennedy was killed. So Kennedy was taken here. Nixon was taken here. Jimmy Carter, he's still alive. Ronald Reagan was taken here. George Bush was taken here. They were all taken, and their casket was put directly underneath this mural. Down below, in the floor below that exact spot, that was supposed to be the real final resting place of George Washington. The real, I would say real live George Washington, but it'd be the real dead George Washington. But the real body of George Washington was supposed to lie in state there perpetually, because it was the idea that one of these days Washington would ascend up the three levels from the basement to the rotunda, to the Capitol Dome, and ascend. Notice this. Notice what all of these women are sitting on. What are they sitting on? Clouds. That's pretty loud. They're sitting on clouds. Because the idea was that Washington was supposed to ascend above the heights of the clouds and be like the Most High. That's what the phrase apotheosis means. Man becoming God or a God. But as it, I don't know who made the decision that Washington would be buried at the Masonic Lodge named after him, the Washington Lodge, down in, I think it's in Arlington, Virginia, I'm not sure. But it's the idea that in that basement, there's nobody there. That would be, that's what's referred to as the cenotaph, the empty tomb. Like with Jesus, he is not here, for he has risen. And so there's no body there, but it was intended that George Washington would lie in state there so that in the day of resurrection, he would rise up above the three levels and become a god, and being sitting above the heights of the clouds with all of these 13 virgin maidens surrounding him. These are goddesses, by the way. The number 13, mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. That's who these 13 were supposed to be. Okay? That was, I dealt with all of that in the, at the very beginning of last year, on this series called On the Clouds and the Antichrist. Isaiah 42:8, I am the Lord, that is my name, and my glory will I not give to another, neither my praise to graven images. And what they just did was, they see the rainbow here? The bow that is in the cloud in the day of rain is found in Genesis 9 and Ezekiel chapter 1. And when Ezekiel saw that bow that was in the cloud in the day of the rain, he said that was the likeness of the glory of the Lord. But here you have George Washington sitting above that, rising above even the glory of God, which is symbolized by the rainbow in the cloud. And yet here is God saying, I am the Lord, that is my name, and my glory will I not give to another, neither my praise to graven images. And whoever painted this knew exactly, either they knew exactly what they were doing or they had a spirit leading them to do it. Either way, they're punished for it while we're speaking right now, wishing they'd never done it. Because they've put God to an open shame by elevating George Washington, the first president, who was apotheosized, made into a god, risen above the rainbow in the heights of the clouds. And Ezekiel said, when I saw that rainbow in the cloud, to me that was the likeness of the glory of the Lord. And God said, my glory will I not give to another. So you either accept that that image there is God or his son Jesus Christ, or you must recognize that that symbol represents someone else who wants to sit in the clouds, above the clouds, even above the throne of God. I will be like the Most High, Satan said. Isaiah 19:1, the burden of Egypt. Behold, the Lord rideth upon a swift cloud and shall come into Egypt, and all the idols of Egypt shall be moved at his presence, and the heart of Egypt shall melt in the midst of it. Ezekiel 1:4, and I looked, and behold, a great whirlwind, and came out of the north, a great cloud, and of a fire enfolding itself, and a brightness was about it, and out of the midst thereof is the color of amber. out of the midst of the fire. By the way, the UFO orbs that my son Matthew saw were amber orbs. He said, "Dad, you're not going to believe this. I just saw two amber orbs on my way home tonight. And I don't remember what I thought about it then, but when he reminded me, he came here for our homecoming, and I spoke about this. When he reminded me of that, and he said, 'Dad, don't you remember? That's what I saw.' And I went, 'Oh, I know what you saw.'" But anyway, "Look, and behold, a whirlwind came out of the north, a great cloud and a fire enfolding itself. Brightness was about it. And out of the midst thereof is the color of amber, out of the midst of the fire. Also out of the midst thereof came the likeness of four living creatures. And this was their appearance. They had the likeness of a man." Psalm 68:17, "The chariots of God are 20,000, even thousands of angels. And the Lord is among them, is in Sinai and in the holy place." Now, you know, here's something that we know. We know that our God is all powerful, and he's there's like anything he can't do, and there isn't any place he can't be. And some have ridiculed the Bible because they say, "What, your God needs a car to ride around in? Really? Is that how powerful your God is? He needs to be sitting in a cart somewhere being pulled around by angels? Is that how powerful you are?" No, God doesn't need that. But he's chosen it. God can be anywhere, at any time, past, present, or future. God can be there. So he doesn't need this chariot, but he chooses to use it for whatever reason. So Psalm 68:17, "The chariots of God are 20,000, even thousands of angels. The Lord is among them, as in Sinai, in the holy place." So even though God doesn't need these things, it's just like us. God gives us the blessing and the benefit of being used by God to do something for him. Let me talk about our feeding program in Kenya, how that got started. I was watching a documentary on YouTube, and it was about a guy in some, I don't think it was India, it might have been Sri Lanka or something like that. And there is this Sikh temple. And every day, the Sikh temple feeds, free of charge, any and everybody who wants to eat there. Which means that all the food gets donated. All the labor that's done is done for free, which includes cooking the food, preparing the food, dishing the food, cleaning the dishes, and cleaning up the place. And they do this every day. Now, they do it because their religion says, if you do these good deeds will outdo your sins, and you get to go to heaven. And I get that. But I was a little jealous. I said, "God, here is a house, a house of worship, that people come from miles around every day to get free food every single day. God, I want to do something like that. I want to give away food to people." What I had in mind was to to buy what they call banana box groceries. I don't know if you know what that is. But sometimes food manufacturers will do overruns of foods, or they'll market some new food product and it doesn't go over very well. And so they have all this junk food laying around that nobody will buy. Or you have some food that is within a week or two of its date expiring and it gets pulled off the shelf. And so that goes into these boxes that they ship bananas in. It's called banana box groceries. Sometimes the cans are dented, which means you can't sell it as brand new food. Nobody wants to buy a dented can. So that goes in there as well. And then there are companies that distribute to resellers these banana box grocery items. And what I thought was going to happen was I was going to set up a place where we could get all these banana box groceries and sell them for really, really cheap so that people who don't have a lot of money could at least have some food to eat every week. But that's not what God came up with. Because I brought it up to Michael, my son-in-law, and I said, Michael, I think God's wanting us to feed people. So he calls to one of the station managers out in Samburu or Turkana, one of the two. And this person tells him, Michael, we have people dying out here of malnutrition every day. And as soon as he told me that, I went, that's what we're supposed to do then. We're supposed to go feed these people. Now, we don't feed them because we feel like we have to in order to earn or merit our salvation. We do so because our salvation has already been given to us. And we do so because of what God has done for us and through us. And we want to do something really, really, really neat for God. And we want to feed hungry people. And we had one person who donated the first $500 to do our very first feeding. And I was absolutely stunned at how well it worked. So we got hooked on it from there on out. We want to feed people. So again, and here's what I'm saying. God doesn't need us to go out and feed people. Because God could feed them like he did Israel in the land, in the wilderness. God could just pour out manna from heaven every day if he wanted to. But then God gives us the ability to let us ourselves be used of God to do something good for God, for the kingdom of God, and for the people that God loves. God leaves enough work in this world so that he gives us something to get in on, to get involved with. And I'm telling you, no greater blessing in the world than to know that you did something and God multiplied it, God blessed it, God used it. God did something good, fantastic with it. By the way, he didn't pay off a sin debt that you had for that, because that sin debt's already been paid by his only begotten son. God just gives you the benefit of knowing that he used you to do it. And that's why God rides around in a chariot. He doesn't need one. But he chooses to ride in one. To give those angels the blessing of being the one who, we're the ones who carry God from place to place. You see what I'm saying now? We're not doing this because we hope to get more salvation out of people. We've gotten all the salvation we could ever need. That's why we're doing it. We're doing it not to earn. We're doing it because we've already been given and we know we could not earn. Jeremiah 4:7, the lion has come up from his thicket. The destroyer of the Gentiles is on his way. He has gone forth from his palace to make thy land desolate, and thy city shall be laid waste without inhabitants. So you remember, God rides a chariot. Guess who else rides a chariot? Bye. That's actually a tarot card. And it's called the Chariot. And I want you to, if you were to break down the symbols, you know what this means right here? See the canopy above him that's got stars in it? That's the cosmos, the heavens. The stars are the rulers of the darkness of this world. Notice that the chariot is drawn or carried by two sphinxes. One is black and is a male. The other one is white and is a female. Notice they are opposites. Think about it. So he is the lion that has come up from his thicket. The destroyer of the Gentiles is on his way. He has gone forth from his place to make thy land desolate, and thy city shall be laid waste without an inhabitant. Behold, he shall come up as clouds, and his whirlwind and his chariots shall be as a whirlwind. You know what the Indian Sanskrit word for whirlwind is? Chakra. When you hear those who practice transcendental meditation or yoga or in any of these other new age garbage things, they talk about their seven chakras. They're talking about energy vortexes or whirlwinds. And his chariot shall be as a whirlwind, literally spirits. And his horses are swifter than eagles. Woe unto us, for we are spoiled. And those in the Air Force who've ever tried to chase down a UFO has never succeeded one time. And some of them come back and say it's almost like they can hear what we're saying to our other ships and our aircraft carrier. It's almost like they can hear what we're saying because we put out through secure channels what our strategy is going to be for surrounding this UFO. And all of a sudden this UFO figures out what we're going to do, and it does exactly what we're trying to do against it. It seems like it knows it, and it already finds its way out of it before we ever get there. It's because they're devils. And they can hear. It doesn't matter how well encrypted your radio signal is. They can hear it. They know exactly what it says. They're very, very intelligent. So when you see these chariots, you can either think it's the chariot of God, which is what Betty Andreessen thought. She thought that UFO must have been something that God sent, and those little gray aliens must have been little messengers or aliens or angels from God who were going to use her to bring in the kingdom of God. And she believes that to this day, she believes that. But that's the chariot card, part of the tarot. In the movie Close Encounter, I just went through all these movies with, there's an alien invasion of some kind in it. In the movie Close Encounters, the aliens coming in the clouds here, they're going into the clouds here at Devil's Tower. These clouds come up before the mothership arises, and all these UFOs start coming out of the clouds. This is the movie E.T. Notice the ship is coming from the clouds. The movie Arrival, they all show up in fog. In fact, when we finally do see the large octopus giant aliens, they're always shrouded in a fog or a mist or a cloud. Interesting. And what it is, it's a symbolism of the Lord coming in the clouds. Only in this case, it's not the Lord. It's the UFOs. It's the ETs. The TV, the movie Battleship, which was based on the game Battleship. Sure enough, the aliens send down their little things in the clouds. War of the Worlds. Tom Cruise, all of these alien ships come down. They create clouds all around them. They're coming in the clouds. So that was the first Watchmen series that I did in the year 2019. And then I started getting ready for the Red River Prophecy Conference. And I was going to deal with a couple of issues. Number one, cryptozoology, crypto creatures, cryptids, they call them, and the fact that the Bible says they're real, and then I was going to deal with UFOs, and again, the fact that the Bible said they were real. So I started out dealing with the Mothman of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, and you had all of these people. One film adaptation with Richard Gere of The Mothman of Point Pleasant. And then John Keel writes a book about it. And then I have three different documentaries about The Mothman of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, interviewing all these people who are still alive back in the 60s when they were seeing this humanoid bird-like creature, usually 7 to 8 feet tall. One young couple, they were out on a date and just outside of Point Pleasant during World War II. You know, the United States had all these places where they were storing ammunition. They were storing it inside the heartland of America. That way the enemy couldn't get to it and steal their ammunition. They'd have to go through, you know, several hundred miles of good American patriots in order to do it. Well, Point Pleasant, Virginia was a place where they stored all this TNT. And so now they've turned it into a state park, and couples used to go out there and they used to romance each other. So you have this couple out there in the 60s, and all of a sudden this Mothman shows up in front of their car. Freaks them out. They take off. The Mothman, not even flapping any wings, flying next to their car, stays right up with them, and they're doing 70, 80 miles an hour. And they can remember the humanoid appearance of the Mothman, the red glowing eyes of this thing and how it literally flew ahead of them, stopped, and forced them to stop right in front of it as it stared them down. And you have other accounts from Point Pleasant, West Virginia, of the Mothman. From all over the area, people telling the exact same story. Several residents of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, began to report seeing a large, dark human form with a wingspan over 10 feet with huge glowing red eyes. When it flew, it would spread its wings but never flap them, lifting straight up and flying and sometimes chasing cars at over 90 miles an hour. And I remember when I finally came out with this, what I had hoped would happen, happened. A lady came, they visited our church, and she said, "Pastor, I got to tell you something." And she said, "I can tell you this because I think you'll believe me." I said, "Go ahead." She said, when she was young, even though she was an adult, she was about 18, 19, 20 years old, somewhere around in there. She still had a curfew. She lived in her mom and dad's house, and they said, "You're going to be home by a certain time. I don't care how old you are. We're not going to stay up all night worried about where you are." So she's on her way home one night, and it's late. 11 o'clock at night. She's supposed to be home by 11 o'clock at night. Down in southern Arkansas, in the Ozarks, she's going down these old, if you've ever been down these old county roads down in rural areas, okay, they're not known for, you know, having speed lanes where you can do 75, 80 miles an hour. But she said on the way home, right next to the forest, the wilderness, she said, "I saw a centaur." And I said, "What?" She said, "Pastor, I'm telling you, it was half beast, lower half beast, upper half human, human torso, human arms, human head." And she said, "I saw this thing for, I know, at least 8 seconds. And so I counted out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I said, "You know what? That's a long time." And she said, "It was." And she said, "I wasn't looking at an owl. I wasn't looking at someone dressed up in a costume. I saw it for 8 seconds, which when you count it out, it's long enough to know that you're not seeing anything from this world. You're seeing something that is not from this world." And she said, "I know what I saw." And I said, "You know what? I believe you. I believe you. Do I believe that's possible? Absolutely. I mean, read Ezekiel 1. In Ezekiel 1, you have humanoid creatures with wings. They have the feet of human. They have the appearance of a man. And yet they have wings. They have four faces, an ox, an eagle, a lion, and a man. But they have the form of a human form." And for her to tell me with a straight, and what does she have to gain by this? She knows by telling me she's not going to gain some great fortune. But she said, "You know, I've never been able to talk about this until you started talking about it." And she says, "I think now I have somebody I can tell my story to." Another pastor's wife, pastor's mom, told me that in central Illinois, when she was probably 10, 11, 12 years old, something like that, that a girl in their community ended up missing, a young lady, probably about 19 years old, ended up missing. The rumor was that she was kidnapped by a Bigfoot, a Sasquatch. Now, my wife, as I'm telling this to my wife and my daughter, they're picking this up from the airport, my wife starts looking into whether or not there were any similar stories from the mid-60s in this part of Illinois. And she said, there's a whole website full of Bigfoot sightings in this same area at this same time. And this pastor's mom told me that a week after this girl came up missing, and the story was that a Bigfoot got her, her and her older brother and another young lady who was about 18, 19, she was old enough to drive, they left their house one night and they drove up to this area that was right next to a wooded forest area where supposedly this girl, that was the last place she was seen. And she said, we parked there, turned the lights off, turned the motor off, and we waited. She said about 15 minutes later, this thing came out of the woods, tall, dark, hairy. The stench was unbelievable from this thing. And he crawled up on top of the hood of the car to look inside the windshield. He got off and went over behind the car. And the pastor's mom is telling me this story. She's sitting in the back seat. And all of a sudden she feels this smelly, hairy hand come through the window, touching her on the neck and on the shoulders. And she said, I just froze. Pretty soon, the hand left. The thing goes around to the back of the car and starts picking up the back of the car to try to shake the car, try to see if he can shake the people out of it. The poor gal up in the front seat, trying to get the car started, couldn't get it started. All of a sudden, it started. And as soon as those rear tires, you know, back then, all the cars were rear-wheel drive. As soon as the back tires hit the ground, they sped off. And I asked this woman several questions. I had the recording of it. I said, did you tell your parents? Yeah. What did your parents say? Don't you ever tell this story to anybody ever again. So they didn't. Now I'm assuming their parents have now gone on to whatever kingdom they had coming to them. But I believe it. I believe it. I think these stories are real. And I think these cryptid sightings, not only are they real, but I think they're going to increase as time goes on. There's Ezekiel 1. Also out of the midst thereof came the likeness of the four living creatures, and this was their appearance. They had the likeness of a man, and the word that we use now for that is humanoid. It had a human appearance in that it walked around upright on two legs. Ezekiel 1:10, as for the likeness of their faces, they four had the face of a man, and the face of a lion, and on the right side, the four had the face of an oxen on the left side, and they four also had the face of an eagle, or a bird man. A bird man of any kind. Now, does God make all the cherubims exactly the same? No, I don't think so. We know that Lucifer, the dragon, was the anointed cherub that covereth. He looked like a dragon, not like a lion and a leopard and a man and an eagle. He looked like a lion. So were there other angelic creatures that had humanoid appearance, and yet they had maybe the face or the other parts of the body from some other creature? Well, I would say, according to the Bible, yes. This book was written called Haunted Valley, More Folk Tales of Appalachia. Sightings began as early as 1914, describing a large bird with the head of a man and the wingspan of over 12 feet. Sightings continued until the 1940s and were said to be occurring just before tragic events. See, the idea is that these things are harbingers. Is that they come down and their appearances seem to be associated with some form of doom wherever they are. So near Point Pleasant, Flatwoods, West Virginia, 1952, a sighting of a silver UFO brought several people, including a member of the National Guard, to a wooded area where they encountered a creature standing about 10 feet tall, glowing orangish eyes on a blue-red face or a blood-red face, and accompanied by a foul smell which caused vomiting for several hours. The creature made a hissing sound and glided toward the group. Some attributed the sighting to a barn owl. Braxton County residents faint, become ill after run-in with weird 10-foot monster. And there's a picture of it. Now, this was one of the documentaries that I have about the Mothman of Point Pleasant, West Virginia. This is what really got my attention. He said this, Lawrence Gray, a school teacher, eyewitness. He said approximately 3 a.m. he saw the Mothman outside his window. He described it as, quote, a devil. It was an awful, horrible feeling. An evil presence. Just standing there, it had a body about 6 feet tall, reddish eyes, grayish form. This presence, I can still feel it. It was just evil. 100% evil. So me being a churchgoer, a Christian, knowing what the Bible says about the blood of Christ, I began to plead the blood in my mind, and little by little, that thing began to disappear like putting salt on a slug. It just evaporated. Bump, bump, bump. Now, it's said that these things are harbingers of bad things to come. So you have all these sightings of the Mothman. And in December 15th, 1967, the bridge that runs from Ohio into West Virginia, called the Silver Bridge, collapsed, resulted in 31 vehicles falling into the river, killing 46 and injuring 9. Failed eye bar joint and weld identified as cause, resulted in congressional passage of National Bridge Inspection Standards in 1968. But you can see clearly on that image that there does seem to be some form of winged humanoid creature on that bridge. just before it took place. I mean, who knows? The Owl Man. In Cornish folklore, the Owl Man, sometimes referred to as the Cornish Owl Man or the Owl Man of Monaghan, is an owl-like creature said to have been seen around mid-1976 in the village of Monaghan, Cornwall, England. The Owl Man is sometimes compared to Mothman. However, a Eurasian eagle owl is likely the source of the legend. The first sighting of the Owl Man in the 1920s drew surrealist painters Max Ernst and Leonora Carrington in 1930. They are said to have performed rituals to try to summon what they referred to as Therianthropes. Therion means beast and anthropos means a man, or literally a beast man. And I want you to look at its description. Various people tried to draw according to their best ability. If you would ask me to draw this thing, I'm drawing three sticks. Okay? But this person goes into this kind of detail. Draws the humanoid figure of a man, red eyes, and then gives it the image of owl wings. Not bad. Not bad at all. There are to this day stories of the Chicago, and I'm not making this up, Chicago Bat Man. Not Batman and Robin type Batman. Not the Caped Crusader. Not the Dark Knight. But literally a large bat humanoid creature. August 6, 2017, two concert goers see a bat-like flying humanoid with glowing red eyes in Grant Park following the Chicago Lollapalooza. August 9, 2017, a couple are startled by a large winged being with bright red eyes flying over Lakeshore Drive. August 10, 2017, a city employee has a huge giant fowl flying off at a flying off of Chicago's Ohio Street breach. August 21st, 2017. A woman and her friend see a large black bat with humanoid features in Chicago just prior to the solar eclipse. August 21st, 2017. A second sighting of a shadowy flying humanoid occurs in Chicago's Wicker Park and neighborhood. August 22nd, 2017, a truck driver, these are recent ones, a truck driver sees a large winged being with thick glistening hair flying over the Chicago suburb of McCook. August 22nd, 2017, a monstrous bat with a 12-foot wingspan is seen in the same area McCook and the truck driver sighting from the same day. August 2nd, 2017, a bat-like flying mothman is seen over Pulaski Road in Chicago. August 27th, 2017, a retired police officer sees a dark gargoyle with red eyes in the Forest Park neighborhood of UEPNM, something like that. This is a witness rendering of the Chicago Batman. Now, and again, I'm asking you the question. As a Bible believer, do you believe that creatures like this can even exist? And can be seen by human eyes as being in existence. Do you believe that? If you do, write a comment in the comment section of this video. Say, Pastor Mike, I not only believe, but I saw one, or I know somebody that saw one, or they know somebody who saw one. And give others the things that you want them to know that you believe that creatures like this actually exist on this planet and from time to time can be seen. Because if you ask me what they are, I just tell you flat out, they're evil angels. They're devils. No doubt in my mind whatsoever. They are being seen. They are being manifested. How they're doing that, why they're doing that, I don't know. But I believe in them. If I didn't believe in them, I wouldn't be talking about them. But I believe in them. Here is a list from 2011 to the present, the number of Batman sightings just in the Chicago area, which is one of the murder capitals of the world. And I do believe that these creatures are associated with murder and death. The Bible calls them doleful creatures. And doleful creatures means that they love to go to funerals and mourn. I don't know if you ever read of the days in history where people would hire professional mourners. They would never see. You go to a funeral and you don't really know the guy, you don't cry for him. But you always have these people who seem to be able to turn the tears on and turn the screams on, who know they're going to get paid for it. And then we have all of these sightings basically over the murder capital of the entire world. On a summer evening in 2013, my son and I, this is an eyewitness story. My son and I were leaving my friend's house just outside of DePlain, Illinois. Her driveway is about a quarter mile long. There are no lights along the driveway. About halfway to the road, my son yelled out, "What's that?" I was startled and slammed onto my brakes. "What are you yelling for?" He said, "They're in the tree." I glanced up into the tree and noticed talons wrapped around the largest lower branch. The tree was thick with foliage, so it was hard to make out what it was. I figured it was just an owl or an eagle, but as soon as we watched the tree begin to move, like there was something very heavy in the tree. The headlights were pointed directly at the tree, so there was some light. There was suddenly a human tall figure dropped from the tree and landed so upright on the ground and in front of us. It was dark gray in color, as I figured. At the clawed feet and muscular legs, I noticed the bottom tip of the folded wings behind it. My eyes followed up the human-like body, which looked like dark green skin. The head and the face literally reminded me of a gargoyle. Snarling features and an evil-looking. The eyes were large and reflected on orange-colored. I believe it also had short horns on the side of his head. OMG. What is that? At the same time, my son begged me, "Let's go, let's go. The best of the best." It's huge wings and literally took off up over the car. I called my friend on my cell phone as we were driving home. I told her what we had witnessed. She was totally dumbfounded as she told me that she had never seen anything like that. While driving, I asked my son what he thought he saw. He called it a Batman. I simply responded, "Okay," but I thought gargoyle is some other mythical creature. I was deeply affected by this beast and have carried this odd feeling that it would remember us. Here's some other witness drawings. Various ones, 1993, there. Shinigami. Japanese mythology spirits that are associated with death or draw humans to their death. A ghoul-like creature that has glowing eyes that mesmerize their victims. Yeah. Yeah, I believe they're real. I absolutely believe that this stuff is real. Lechuza, a legendary witch that can transform itself into a large owl-like being. In most accounts, the face of transformed being remains of that of the witch. The supposed winged being is said to swoop down and attack its victims, as well as loudly screeching, a similar to the sound made by a banshee. Then we have Ezekiel 1, the whirlwind chariots of God. Look, and behold, a whirlwind came out of the north, a great cloud. Ezekiel 9, their wings were joined one to another, and they turned not when they went, and they went everyone straight forward. Ephesians 1:12, and they went everyone straight forward. Whether the spirit was to go, they went, and they turned and not when they went. As for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like the burning coals of fire and the appearance of lamps. It went up and down among the living creatures, and the life was bright. And out of the fire went forth lightning, and the whole living creatures ran and returned as the appearance of a flash of lightning. In other words, zip, zip. They're there. And they're right back again in nearly an instantaneous motion. Instantaneous ability. The ability to go from, let's say, planet Mars to planet Earth in less than 10 minutes. Whereas right now it takes at best 10 months with current technology. But the technology is being worked on as we are speaking right now. Technology is being worked on that will propel humans to Mars much faster than the 10 months that we previously thought it would take for us to send them there. And I'm talking much faster. I'm talking the ability to break the speed or come close to breaking the speed of light. I think that's coming. Let's see here. Where else would I want to go? Psalm 104, who layeth the beams of his chariots in the waters, who maketh the clouds of his chariot, who walketh upon the wings of the wind. Psalm 68:17, the chariots of God are 20,000, even thousands of angels. The Lord is among them, as in Samuel, in the holy place. So God rides a chariot. Again, we don't know why. We don't know why God chooses to ride a chariot. We don't know exactly why God chooses to put up with us and allow us, but he does. So to me, it's not a marvel that God would use probably the hottest rod, the sweetest ride that there is in all of heavendom, that God rides in that. And then, it's my favorite story. Because with this one, there's just no other way to explain it. If you don't believe in UFOs, if you don't believe in little gray aliens, if you don't believe that something from another world or maybe another dimension can come to this world, make an appearance, scare the devil out of people, get back in the ship and leave, no one able to take photographs, no one able to take snapshots, nothing like that. If you don't believe in UFOs and gray aliens, have I got a story to tell you? To me, this is the most compelling, the most phenomenal this is it. This is the story of the century. This story right here proves to me beyond any doubt whatsoever that we are living in a time where mankind is about to discover beyond any shadow of any doubt that we are in fact not alone in this universe. And not only are we not alone, we are inferior to other things in this universe. And by that I mean devils. So September 1994, and I'm going to close with this for today. September 1994, Ariel Primary School. The teachers were all having a meeting inside, and there was just one or two, like, teacher's aides that were watching the children out on the playground. Must have been a relatively safe place for them to play. They were allowing the children to play on the playground, so there really wasn't any of the staff out there that saw this. But out of the 92, or out of the 90 or 100 or so students that were out there, 62 of these students. Now, we're not talking about first graders and kindergartens. We're talking about 11, 10, 12. That's the age group that we're talking about. 62 students witnessed a silvery disc hover and then land. And three little men, they called them. We would call them gray aliens. Dressed in black suits. They appeared out of the ship. We don't know exactly how they got out. They just appeared out. Maybe a door there or something like that. And they were all wearing black suits. Don't know what that is. The men were able to transmit thoughts into the children's minds. Messages that said the humans were not taking good care of the planet and that bad things would happen as a culture. One of the aliens reported having having feelings of love for the children. That's not the first time that's happened. There was a lady who was being abducted. She was on an exam table in this UFO, and she was screaming bloody murder because they had a probe inside her, and it was hurting her bad. You know what this old alien did? He went over there and he touched her forehead, and all of a sudden, boom, not only was her pain gone, but she had such a tremendous feeling and emotion of love for this angel that she hated when they told them, okay, we're going to put you all back where we found you. She hated that. She didn't want to go. She said, when this thing touched me, and he had to do it twice, because as soon as he let go, I started screaming in pain again, so he stuck his finger on my forehead. And she said, when he did, not only did all my pain go away, but I literally fell in love with this alien. Now, people, in Genesis 6, when the sons of God came in into the daughters of men, you know, I don't think that that the only sin that was committed on that day was with the angels. I think the women of that day were just as guilty as those angels were. And who knows, maybe a few sodomite men as well. I don't know. But you see my point on that? When these children made eye contact with these aliens, they instantaneously received messages from these aliens. And one of those messages was, love us. We're here to do you good. And instantly, those children became very docile and very much in love with those aliens. That's scary. Because you know what? I think this is 1994, so that's been 2004, 10 years, 2014, 20 years. So that's been about 25 years ago. These kids are all grown up now. All grown up, probably got families on their own. And yet they had encounters with biological entities. They had encounters with them that caused them to love those aliens. And love then is a replacement for, in this case, fear. That's what it was. It was a replacement for that. Anyway, the men were able to transmit thoughts into the children's minds, messages that said the humans were not taking good care of the planet and the bad thing that bad things would happen as a result. One of the girls reported to have feelings of love for the aliens. The stories were believed to such an extent that the BBC sent another bureau chief to interview the children on camera, as also a Harvard University psychiatry professor, Pulitzer Prize winner, Dr. John Mack, who had almost got censored by Harvard University because he got involved with, what was his name? Can't think of his name. Anyway, he got involved with this guy who started doing regressions on all of these people who said they had been abducted by UFOs. Bud Hopkins. Bud Hopkins was his name. Bud Hopkins came out with a couple of books, and he was talking about the similarities in the stories that these people told. That they all basically tell the same thing, that they're in the middle of the night, they're awoken out of sleep, they're paralyzed, they're carried onto a ship. They remember floating through the wall of their house, being carried on the ship, on this table, probes running in them, extracting all sorts of specimens from them related to DNA, and then put back in their bed with the idea that they won't remember any part of this. But then all of a sudden they start having some problems, and they start having, you know, some wild psychosis. And so naturally they go to a psychologist, and the psychologist does a regression on them to find out what happened, and without fail finds out they were abducted by UFOs. So they all tell basically the same story. So the stories were believed to such an extent, the BBC had sent bureau chief to interview the children on camera. Also Harvard professor, university psychiatry professor, Dr. John Mack, came to interview the children to research their experience and to determine if they were being truthful. Macker reported, I was quite convinced that this was something genuinely mysterious and real, and it does need, and that I need to think about it. If this is real, then what does this mean? In other words, here's this man. He spent all of his life just studying nuts and bolts scientists about the human brain. Doesn't attend church anywhere. Doesn't go to religious meetings. He's one of these Harvard elite. And then he goes to interview these kids, thinking he's going to be able to debunk all these kids. Because apparently they must have all, instead of, you know, several of them getting in trouble, they must have all concocted this story about aliens coming to space ground and took us all and blah, blah, blah. The truth of it is, some of these parents are going, There's no way. So they called in the BBC. They interviewed them. They called John Mack. John Mack interviewed them all with parents' permission on camera. And the parents went, my children might make up a lot of things. They never make up stuff like that, ever. They've never done that to me. So that's just a sampling of some of the things that we talked about this year. And then the whole Betty. Check one, two. There we go. Now you can hear me. Anyway, what I was saying, the whole Betty Andreessen story, which I'm dealing with aliens and UFOs. I am still, I found something. The next part of the alien series I was going to do was on the Nordic, pale-skinned, blonde-haired, blue-eyed aliens. And I actually found out some things that I thought, you know what? I need to do more study on this before I talk about this. And it has to do with a group called the Great White Brotherhood. Sounds ominous, doesn't it? Crowley believed in them. Elise Bailey believed in them. Blavatsky believed in them. And a whole slew of others believed in these ascended masters referred to as the Great White Brotherhood, who are, for all intents and purposes, the Nordic aliens. And I just made that connection here not too long ago. So I'm not ready for that next series in dealing with the Nordic aliens. Still making a lot of notes, collecting a lot of articles and things like that. So if you got anything on the Great White Brotherhood, any videos, any articles you want me to take a look at, send them to PastorMikeOnline@gmail.com. Write it in all capital letters. Pastor Mike, here's the research you were looking for. Something like that. That way I'll notice it. But I'm right now I'm doing a Watchmen series. I've had the script written for over a year. Just waiting for the right time to put it out. And I think now's the time to put it out. So pray for me. Pray for our church. Pray that 2020... will be, number one, a far better year as far as the ministry goes than 2019 was, that God would still use me, God would still use our church, God would still use you who are a part of this, by your prayers, by your support, that God would still bless you with being used by God for him. And I don't think the devil's going to leave us alone. I don't think he will. So what I'm asking you to do is asking you to pray that God gives me the strength to endure and to go through all the things that I must go through. Because truly, you are the reason why I do what I do. You, and of course, to the glory of God, but he loves you people, and he wants you to know the truth. You know how you know the truth? You think Bible.